Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Good afternoon, everyone. We are so happy that you joined us today. We appreciate you listening. I'm excited today to have our first topic that we've had in a long time on alternative health and medicine. It's kind of not the traditional path for some, and focuses way more on health prevention and staying healthy than the traditional disease and symptom model that I think we're often used to when we see our healthcare providers. And I have three fabulous ladies with me in the studio today as my guest. I have Dr. Melody Billiott from Alternative Health Atlanta. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Very good. And Dr. Billiott completed her Doctor of Chiropractic at Life University in 1993 and specialized in nutrition, I think, in your undergraduate work. Is that right?
That is right.
Very good. And I also have a thermographer and many, many years radiology specialist, I think, correct me, Rana Dermott, here with us today.
Correct.
And we also have a patient with us today to talk about a very special procedure that she's had that we want to educate all you ladies on out there, and that is Catherine Scott Durr. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for coming today, ladies. Well, first off, I want to start just educating, since this is really our first segment on the Doctors Radio Roundtable Show, talking about alternative medicine. I first want to clear up some language because I think a lot of people confuse alternative medicine, holistic medicine, complementary, integrative medicine. Just there's a lot of confusion out there. So can you start with you, Dr. Billiott, and just kind of educate us a little bit about what you do and how that's different in approach than some of the other?
Sure. I think that if you look at the different definitions of what people use, what most people are trying to get across is that you're looking for an alternative. What we do at our practice is we offer people options. So there are options out there that we all have. And if you look at holistic or alternative, holistic just means as a whole. You're looking at something as a whole, the whole body, the whole part of that person, all the different parts put together. Conventionally speaking, we tend to look at people as parts. If you have a heart problem, you go to that specialist.
Right.
If you have a female problem, you go to that specialist. Alternative would mean you're looking at an option. Are there other options other than what perhaps conventionally is offered to you? So if you're looking at those two definitions, holistic would mean looking at a whole, as a whole, mm-hmm. the whole person. And then alternative would mean, I think, offering options other than what might be the conventional thing that's out there.
Mm-hmm. And would that be different than complementary?
I think complementary and integrative connotate that you are using the best of both.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think that you can use the best of what is out there in our conventional sense with diagnostic tools, all the things that we've developed as a organization and society, and then also use common sense to look at what are some options here that might be less invasive, that might actually lead to a solution, looking for causes. I think a lot of doctors who use both of these might term integrative or complementary.
Mm-hmm. So this whole different way of looking at things, I was doing my research prior to the show and was quite astounded. We were talking in the green room about how much money is actually spent on alternative medicine in a year by Americans currently was, according to the CDC, about $34 billion.
Yes.
It was also surprising to me that and that accounts actually for 1 in 10 healthcare dollars are spent on alternative therapies. So
yes.
Patients are coming in droves.
Yes.
And another thing that kind of surprised me, although it can be controversial, was a lot of these patients, two-thirds, don't ever tell their primary care physician that they're coming.
This is also true.
Okay. So what that equated to me was, like it or not, agree or not, patients are coming and they're spending money over and over and over. So something's working somewhere or people wouldn't keep doing it. Is that kind of a...
That's kind of what I see. The people who come to me over the years are looking for options. They're looking for ways to get well because the tools that they've been using or the solutions that they've found aren't working for them. Mm-hmm. Bottom line, that's where I get the people who come to me for help. Mm-hmm. So if I can offer them an option or I can offer them a solution, I would much prefer them to speak to their conventional doctor about what they're doing. There is often a disconnect sometimes with some providers. Either they don't understand what the person's doing, they don't like what they're doing, or the person perceives one or both of those, even though it may not be the case.
Right.
So I do think that people are, for the most part, very bright and very able to look at the community at large and see what they're missing. And so when they start looking for options, if they work, they bring their mom, they bring their daughter, they tell their friends, and that's how it gets out. And it is a grassroots type thing because, you know, people, word of mouth, people tell people who tell other people. And if it works, they find out about it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the bottom line. Does it work? And at my practice, if it works, we use it. And that's our whole goal is results. How do we get people to get better? And I think that's what people are looking for.
I'd agree. Another thing I found in the research was it is becoming so widespread that it actually is spilling over into more traditional medicine. So I found something like now 50 different medical school curriculums now have alternative treatments, programs, therapies as a component of their main program, including names like Georgetown, Duke, yep. University of California. So it is spilling over into mainstream. We must have gotten past the critical mass that the patients are requiring that everybody pay attention to. It's kind of spilling over into mainstream.
Well, I think the consumer dollar speaks.
Right.
And I think that results also speak. And I am encouraged to see that there is more common sense being put into conventional type protocols in many schools. It excites me so much to see that conventional medicine is actually looking at things outside of the view that has been for the last long time.
Right.
So it is. It is. Many of the schools are offering programs. A lot of them, if they aren't offering programs in, they're offering programs about so that they will be more comfortable. Some of the younger students coming through, and some have been patients and headed to medical school and are in medical school, they are much more open to what their patients are saying. So I can see a change just in the generation currently going through the process of training in the medical schools. And they're a lot more open to this and a lot more willing to speak to their patient, which I think will be so much more beneficial. Official for the person. It's the patient that matters in the end.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about how you gravitated to this field and what your path was to set up your practice and decide to go into this specialty.
Well, I was headed to medical school. It was my intention, as long as I can remember, to be a doctor and help people in that regard. Mm-hmm. When I was looking at what my specialty might be or what I might specialize in when I got to medical school, I started to realize that what I thought I was going to do was not what was actually going to happen. And I realized that what I would learn was not focused on wellness and on healing. It was more focused on pharmaceuticals and addressing symptoms. And I don't know why or how that I saw that that wasn't what I wanted to do. But early on, I thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? And I had a crisis. Went home for the summer, talked it over with my parents. My dad had recently seen a chiropractor for an injury he had gotten on the job or playing with my sisters or something, and he had recommended I should go speak to her. I spoke to her, and philosophically speaking, what I heard was the body heals itself, and I thought, I can get on board with that. The body does heal itself, and she said, do you know that there are ways that you can help the body and access information and give the body what it needs so it can heal? And I thought, wow. This is good. Where can I learn more about that? So she gave me more research to do. I looked at different chiropractic colleges. I looked at what they thought, what they believed, what they taught, and decided that that was the path that I was going to go down. So totally changed my view. Went into chiropractic, got my chiropractic degree, and came out and practiced chiropractic. The life-changing fork in the road for me came from my own personal health issue. I had recently gotten married and had returned from my honeymoon to hear that fateful message on the answering machine that said, call the doctor's office, your results are back, and that was it. And then you know that's not good.
Not good.
Not good.
Not like, it's all normal.
Yeah,
no,
or nothing, right?
Yes.
No phone call. No, I had the call, come in now, we have an appointment for you. Mm-hmm. So I came in, and the issue that I had was apparently quite serious and was almost to the cancerous stage, and they were very concerned and wanted me to do the procedure and head through the, you know, process. And I, having just graduated recently and realizing the body heals itself, said, wait a second, the body heals itself. Isn't that possible? Is there another way? They told me, absolutely, there's no other way. So being the stubborn person that I am, I did go home and I called a friend of mine and I said, is there another way? And she said, well, yes, I know this doctor. I need you to go see him. And I flew out to Minnesota, to the Twin Cities, north of the Twin Cities, and went to visit
in
a doctor.
North Woods.
The North Woods to visit Dr. Gus. And he opened a whole new world to me. And he showed me that, you know what? The body can heal itself. Tell me about what you eat. I was like, what? Tell me about what you do. Here's a couple of tests we're going to do that are going to show what's going on with your body's elimination, your ability to function, your liver function. I want to see how your body's working. Has anyone asked you that? I'm like, no, not at all. So I got on a program right then and there with him, started looking at the common sense things in my life that I was doing that I could change, changed, made a 360 overnight once I realized what those were, and pretty much soon after that started seeing changes in my body, got fired by my doctor, had to find another doctor that was, and again, that's one of the reasons why people don't tell their doctors. And again, this was almost 20 years ago, but you know, I had to find another doctor who was willing to listen to me and willing to talk to me. And I wasn't crazy. I just wanted some help medically, but I wanted monitoring. Mm-hmm. So he was willing to do that and totally said, you know, if this doesn't resolve, I'm going to recommend you go through with the procedures we've recommended. And I said, totally. If it doesn't resolve in 6 months, I'm there. So he kept watching, and 3 months went by. It didn't change. 6 months went by, and it was a tad bit better. He looked at me kind of funny and said, I don't know what you're doing, because that doesn't change. And I was like, well, you wouldn't believe me anyway. And so I just kind of went on doing what I was doing. And a year went by, and I went back, and he said, I can't believe this, but he said, it's pretty much for all intents and purposes gone, and I don't even know what you're doing. And now he looked at me even more weird, like I've never had this happen.
Now I need to know what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I told him what I was doing, and he still looked at me kind of funny, like, really? Like, he couldn't quite get that there was something that I could do that could actually make my body revert back to a healthy state. And I think for me, that was when I said, wow, this is what I did from the actions that I took, very specific supplementation, very specific metabolic changes I had to make. But my body wanted to be well. That's what I want everyone to realize, is your body wants to be well. It's not a whole group of cells just waiting to, you know, attack you and make you sick, like sometimes we think with our genes going to express these things that we've had for years in our family. Sometimes if we realize that idea that the body wants to be well, it will be. And so from that experience, I immediately began getting certified in other types of training that enabled me to help people in the exact way that I had been helped. And since then, have been able to have a positive effect on thousands of people. And, you know, those clouds often have silver linings, and I'm always grateful for the things that have happened in my life that actually have led me through to learn new things that have really benefited a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So we actually touched on several of the tenets of alternative medicine. One is the body's ability to heal itself.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is caring for the person as a whole.
Yes.
Not a disease parts or a symptom.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is the patients can create and can be responsible for their own healthy lifestyle choices that
Absolutely.
Lead to prevention
yes.
rather than the disease kind of continuing, right?
Absolutely.
Any other big tenets of alternative medicine thought that I've missed in there?
I think you've really hit them. I think number one is the patient responsibility. And that's one of the things, like the big R word, right? Responsibility. And a lot of people don't like to hear that, because what we've kind of been trained to in our culture is to get a pill, find some quick fix, and then it's going to be all over. So if someone comes to my office and they're looking for a pill or a quick fix, we have to have a conversation, because truly I am only a helper. I am only a coach. I help the body overcome the obstacles. The patient does 80% of the work. I direct, I kind of lead, but the patient does the work themselves. And that's kind of the thing, I think, for the people who decide to do whatever it takes to get well. Like, I was going to get well. I was young. I hadn't had a family yet. That was it. You know, I when I looked and saw what I was doing with my life and some of the lifestyle choices with foods and, you know, whatnot that I had just thought of as normal, when I decided to change that, it made a whole difference in my life. And I think sometimes people don't always know what to do. And then sometimes it's that desire and the willingness to do it. But that's a huge, huge tenet of looking at your own personal responsibility, and the combination of all the decisions we've made in our lives lead us to this point. And I think that doctors and the doctors of the future should be people who guide people to the best decisions and the right decisions, and looking at what they can do with their own lives to make those changes.
Yeah, I think you're right. We get too dependent on the doctors and the medicine. I know as we head into the Affordable Care Act, and people are going to be more and more responsible for their own decisions and staying and keeping healthy throughout your life, and financially being penalized when you don't, Even the government is paying attention to some of the things you're doing. One of the things I found out is the NIH now has a National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine.
Yep.
And they funded that at $130 million a year. So not only are the patients themselves seeing, but our federal government is actually starting to drive patients to be more and more responsible and putting their money where their mouth is in terms of resources there. So that's really good. Let's talk a little bit about how patients find you and what are some common things. You told me, and I heard you say, boy, when they're at their wit's end and they think, mm-hmm. I'm not, okay, the traditional thing didn't work for me. I'm going to try something else. What's an alternative?
Right.
What kind of patients come? What kind of problems do they have?
My patients have all kinds of problems. Mm-hmm. I see patients from small children, babies, up into 50, 60, 70. I think my oldest patient was 90. Mm-hmm. So we see them through the whole gamut of their lives and lots of different problems. The children tend to have issues with eczemas, asthmas.
Allergic type
issues have grown exponentially over the years.
So let's stay on that for a minute, because I know you're also certified in desensitization. And tell us mm-hmm. a little bit about your training in that and kind of how you approach those patients.
Well, when someone has a sensitivity, what we're talking about is a body's overreaction to something that should be a normal common occurrence. If your body is exposed to something, it should respond. It should just handle it and move on. Sensitivities, or even people who have severe allergies, have an over-response to that particular substance. Because what we're looking at here is, how do we help the body overcome that? Where did that come from? Mm-hmm. In many cases, if you can use the analogy of a bad computer program. So what goes in comes out. And so oftentimes how I look at an allergy or a sensitivity is, there are reasons why the body has gotten to the point where it will overreact to things. Children in this day and age, with the society that we are living in, have become sicker and sicker earlier and earlier. Just 20 years ago when I was in practice, I did not see what I see now with these children. They have tests, levels of toxic metals, even higher than their parents. It's just a much more toxic environment. These children have, I think there's many, many different things that they're exposed to, chemically speaking, from the world and around them, vaccinations, many things. And it's not just one thing. Many times it's a combination of many. So when I get the kids, usually it's, how do we address the immune system? How do we get that immune system stronger? How do we work with the parents to help them with their diet? What do we do to actually assist that body to be stronger? And that's ultimately what we're looking at. And sensitivities create blockages across the system. Oftentimes the digestive system doesn't work well. They're reacting to outside pollens and dusts and all kinds of things, having terrible reactions. So our goal as a clinic is basically just to help people's bodies normalize so they can handle the environment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then so that would handle the allergic type or sensitization, mm-hmm. whether it be adult or child kind
yes.
of group of patients.
Yes.
What would be another kind of group of patients that are at their wit's end? What has not worked? What would you see patients in pain?
Pain.
I would think would be a yeah. common one that they get frustrated with.
Hormones are huge. Okay. Women with hormone issues, postmenopausal, premenopausal, fertility. Big, big topics where people just are very much in trouble and can't – the quality of their life is affected by just the way they are. If any of you have ever had hormone problems, you know that they can make you act different ways than you would like to, feel different ways than you would like
to. I can relate to that, unfortunately.
It is not a good thing. I feel like they're the little devils within sometimes, you know, and when they get out of balance, it's all not good. Oftentimes I'll have family members come in and vouch for that fact. And, you know, we've had people who couldn't their coworkers would send them in because they were so unbearable
yes.
to work with, and that we would get thank you notes when they would come
we're
back.
We're all three women here laughing in the studio. We all can relate.
Yeah, because we would get thank you notes when their, you know, coworker
normal
would
again.
Come back like, oh my God, she's so nice. This is how she used to be. So yeah, hormones are a very big thing and a very big challenge for a lot of women. Weight issues, thyroid problems, all of these things we as women have to deal with during our whole lifetime. So that's one of my specialties. That's one of the things that I really enjoy working with, is female hormones and helping those be balanced naturally.
Is there any particular patient population that you specialize in, like women and children? Or
we specialize in women and children. We see all men, women, mm-hmm. but right. our specialty, I think, would be women and children. Usually women ages 35 to 65 is
okay.
the most
sweet spot.
Yeah, that's where most people come.
Okay. So all these different kinds of things you see, you're really a generalist trying to figure out what's going on, what might work for you. Let's talk about what a patient course would be like. So I'm having one of those things happen with me. I show up at your practice. Where do you start and what kind of can the patient expect when they come to see you for the first time?
That's a good question. I just had a lady yesterday I saw and she was so sweet. She sat down. She goes, okay. You're my first alternative experience.
There you go.
And I said, how
has
it?
Did you give her a great alternative experience?
I know. And then you always kind of like, I said, are you okay so far? Yeah. You know, so I think sometimes with alternative or holistic, you know, medicine, sometimes you maybe have heard things or your friends or family have said, wow, it's a bunch of hoodoo, voodoo, gypsy is going to be in there with, you know, tinkling bells and those little
handling snakes and all kinds of stuff.
Snakes and incense and those beady curtains. And it's
touchy-feely. It's kind of known as the touchy-feely, I think, to the layperson sometimes.
I guess so. But I guess what my practice has always been is to introduce the science into the caring. And truly, to me, the difference that we have as a practice is we care about you and we care about where you've been. We care about your story. So the first thing that we do is we get that story and we find out fully how long have you been having this? Where did it come from? What are you experiencing? What are the major issues that you've been dealing with? And what do you want to handle? That's the first thing I want to know is what are your goals? What are your health goals? What do you want to do and what can I help you to achieve? We have a couple of different labs that we do when you come into the office. One of them is a state-of-the-art test that actually shows how the body is responding to stress. It's based on the heart rate. It's wonderful. It's been used for
What's the name of that test?
It's called heart rate variability. Mm-hmm. And it's a fabulous test. It's been used in many different settings, medical as well as alternative, with fabulous accurate results. That is one of the tests that we use initially. Gives me tremendous information about the body's where they are stability-wise and what base we have to work from. After we get the story and the history of what they've been dealing with their lives, and we cover all the systems, what's been dealing with, you know, what they've been dealing with in all over their body
and
in different areas.
And social history as well.
Of course,
what
yes.
What they do, how they work, what they're exposed to.
What they eat, mm-hmm. What do they have trouble with. So after that, we do an evaluation, and we find out where the stresses are on the body, how the body has been dealing with these stresses, and then we start looking for causes. The number one thing that we do at the office is look for causes. What is behind this? What I have found in my practice is that there are things that cause things. And it's always funny when you talk to someone who doesn't know that, because I had a guy yesterday, has blood pressure problems. His family all have blood pressure problems. He's on blood pressure meds. He's on cholesterol meds. He thinks it's normal. The only thing he really wants to do is run faster. So I said, well, if you're on those medications and you're 35 years old, do you think there could be an issue here? And he said, I never thought about it. And I said, well, the body would like to probably handle whatever issues you have going on. And he said, that is a thought I've never had. So what I found in my practice is that a lot of people don't realize that symptoms are blood pressure, symptom is cholesterol, and there are things in our environment that can contribute to the breaking down of the body's normal responses, which can cause symptoms like those. Heavy metals, environmental toxins, allergies like we talked about before, immune system issues. So there are a lot of things that if you can pinpoint where they're coming from, there's very specific handlings and very specific things that you can do that you can get to the bottom of it, free those body systems from the obstacles that they've encountered in daily life and allow them to go back to their regular, you know, process and function.
Right. Well, one thing I liked about what you said is you were talking, I was thinking about my past experiences and no providers ever asked me what's my healthcare goal. Never.
Yeah.
They said, what are you feeling? Nobody said, well, you're going to quit bleeding to death. You're going to do this. No one's ever asked me that my entire life. So I really appreciate that about what you said.
It's important. Yeah. It really is, because it's what you want. What do you want? What I want may be totally different.
Well, and I think the other piece to that is that it's what you're willing to work for.
Exactly.
So if it is your goal and you're going to have to change your behavior, if you're committed to it, then you're more likely to change.
That is totally the reason why I asked that, because it is a relationship. I want a relationship with the person in front of me. I want to establish where are you, because I'm here 100%. And if I know that they're there 100%, what do you think the percentages of them getting well?
Right.
Pretty
right,
good.
Right. So we talked about the heart rate variability test. What are some other tools of your trade besides the assessment? Is there, you use supplements or what are kind of your bag of tricks that you draw from when you're after you make that assessment?
Yep, we use very, very specific supplementation, very specific for that person based on what's found. We use some very specific functional labs that show us deficiencies, mineral patterns, hormone functions. Those are some of the things that we look at as tools and guides to set up a program individually for each person. We have several different acupressure-based techniques that help to balance the body systems amazingly, simply, with no pain, no side effects, just nicely to help with hormone balancing, help with desensitization, help the body to detox more smoothly. So those are a lot of the things that we do. Most of the techniques that we have are used very specifically for a designed program for that person. So whatever it is that you present with, your specific needs, your goals, they're going to be taken into consideration when I write a program for you. And so those particular techniques or the tools, as you say, will be used very precisely to get the result that we want.
Now, one thing I was interested in reading about your practice, and I've been to your practice, so I can appreciate speaking a little bit there from my practice, is you were so passionate about this, you kind of created a custom program called Evectics.
Evectics, yes.
Evectics. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Well, Evectics is the combination of my 20 years of experience and work with patients and the technical expertise that we've developed at the practice. If you go to a lot of different practices, anything, really, you know, one person will specialize in one thing, which is wonderful. The problem is that most people are not all one thing. So it's nice to have many different tools in the toolbox that you can pull out. What, again, I've used to develop this is my own life. You know, so I started out in clinical nutrition, which is designing very specific clinical nutrition supplement programs, diet programs specifically for people. I ran into issues with hormones, couldn't fix them totally and fully with what I had. So I developed systems balancing technique, which helps to balance people's bodies naturally. Went on with that. My son became very, very ill. He was my first child. We almost lost him because of allergies. He was so severely allergic, he could not eat, couldn't drink breast milk. So he was in the ICU. We got him out. I figured out he wasn't going to be able to eat the things that he was, you know, offered. And so I found the systems desensitization technique that I use now, which desensitizes things. And we found a formula that we were able to desensitize for the first time in 4 months he could eat and put on weight. So I flew out to California, learned how to do that. So a lot of these things have developed from my own personal experience. I've used them on family, friends, patients who've been willing to say, look, I have this problem, help me with this. So it's been developed over time and with reproducible systems that work. So the Evectics is a combination and a compilation of these systems and these techniques that I've developed over time that I can apply to a large percentage of the population for a large percentage of chronic problems. Because to me, if someone comes to me, I want to be able to help them. And if I don't have the answer, I'll find it. And that's how I am, and that's how we are at the practice. We'll find it.
One thing I like about what you're telling me is I've also been reading a lot about, in fact, I just came from a conference across town at the Galleria on healthcare consumerism, and one of the big things they're talking about is consumers getting very active in finding a pathway to personalized medicine for them.
Right.
And what works for someone else may not work in my body, or what
it's
that
true.
Drug that works for you may do nothing for me.
Exactly.
And so this whole idea of you're taking your experiencing and kind of customizing the different modalities that you have at your disposal and through your experience, I think make a lot of sense. So I can appreciate that. One thing I kind of want to go back to from the very beginning of the show, we talked about how much money is being spent on alternative medicine, a lot of money.
Yes.
And we were also talking in the green room about how you and your practice transitioned from an insurance-based system to a cash only. So can you just speak a little bit about how you handle the cost of it, what your patients ask you about cost, and kind of just speak to that whole area?
Absolutely. And I think that is one of the main things that consumers have as a question. How much is it going to cost? How long is it going to take? How often do I need to come? Because they're paying out of pocket.
Right.
And we appreciate that at our practice. So our total focus is on service and results. Because I know for me, I'm not writing a check to someone if I can't see something happening, see the benefits, and see the results. So with our patients, when they come in, we give them a very clear understanding of what their program will consist of, how much it's going to cost. We've developed several different ways to pay over the years. So there's monthly plans, there's different options that they have where they can either
have a lot of choices.
Many. Mm-hmm. And you have to kind of have that because people have different healthcare issues. I have some patients who want to pay for a year of care right up front, write a check. I have some people who say, you know what, I need to pay by the month. I have some people who pay by the visit. So it really depends on each person's financial situation, and we sit down with each individual and ask them, where are you? What are you comfortable with? Here's what we're going to do. And we also have several tiers of programs where, yes, you can come in and do the Cadillac and you can do as much as you possibly can because maybe you have a lot of disposable income. And then the people who do not, we can actually give them the most amazing care and still not compromise what they're going to get, but be a little bit more conservative and allow them to do that maybe over a little bit more of a time period or with a little lesser payment because they break it up.
Very good. So I appreciate your candidness on the cost. I think a lot of providers just hesitate to get that question, and you've been dealing with it for years and years, now. Yeah, so I appreciate that.
It is one of the things you have to look at and you have to confront as a provider and as a patient when you do a cash practice. So, yeah.
Before we go on to our other two guests, since we've been monopolizing
the
time
I was thinking about that.
We got a little bit of time. I just wanted, before we move over to the two gals' experience, to talk a little bit about the importance of the mind-body connection and how you incorporate that into your practice. I see a lot about this in the news. I think in general patients get the idea that they are connected, and what we think is a lot of what we get. So if you could just speak to that real quick.
I think that the large part of what we as practitioners and doctors have forgotten is that relationship with the patient and what that patient wants and what they feel that they can do. And half the time for me, that healing process is that communication process. And when we don't have time as doctors to spend that time with our patients, I can tell you countless stories of just a word of encouragement here, a word of advice there, pointing out to someone perhaps that a sick mentality is not the best mentality. Perhaps a positive mentality would be better, and seeing the lights come on and say, thank you so much for telling me that. I'd just gotten used to being sick. You know, that mind-body connection, honestly, no one can get well if they don't want to and if they're not there mentally.
Right.
So it's probably one of the most important. Yeah.
Well, we're running short on time, but I'm going to jump over to Rana, who is our expert. I've actually visited your practice, and I met Rana there, and one of the most incredible things that I've seen was breast thermography.
Yes.
So, Ron, I'll tell you, we have just a few minutes left, but I want to get in how this is different than mammography. It is infrared technology. It is kind of a precursor if there is a problem, but years and years in advance, the whole idea of it is, to me, what I saw was it's very cost effective. It is non-invasive, and it gives me a huge head start in trying to actually prevent a major problem. So can you just, in a very compressed time, talk us a little bit about breast thermography?
Absolutely. And you're absolutely correct. What we understand with X-ray mammography is that we see the structure or architecture of the breast tissue. But with thermography, we are able to see the metabolic or functional changes that happen in the breast tissue 8 to 10 years before we can see that
structural
change.
That's one thing I remembered, was just that huge jump in time that you're able to see changes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so those changes can be from things that we can address quite simply within the body that may be causing inflammation or metabolic changes in that breast tissue, and then restore your risk assessment down to a completely healthy, normal functioning
very
breast
good.
Tissue.
So when they come and visit you, very briefly, tell us a little bit about what actually happens.
Well, you will be in a room that's a little cool. It's about 70 degrees. And we'll acclimate with your top off for about 15 minutes and then take 5 images with the infrared camera. There's nothing that will touch you, no radiation coming toward you.
No smashing of me, no poking of me,
yeah,
no wait there, no hold your breath, or
exactly.
Whatever.
Exactly. So we'll take 5 pictures. After that, we put your hands in cold water.
And the purpose of that is?
That causes the brain to go, ooh, we don't like this. Mm-hmm. And so the body begins to conserve heat to the brain and to the heart. Mm-hmm. And so the breasts actually cool down measurably. And if there's anything untoward going on in that breast tissue, it tends to stay hot and it kind of lights up like fireworks inside the breast
tissue.
So the
whole idea is, if there's red, it's abnormal or high blood flow there, so you're able to see the heat.
Correct.
Associated with the cells in that area.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So cool would be good.
Cool
hot
is good.
Would be, there's something going on.
We may be seeing something there that causes us to be drawn attention to, and we need to change some things.
Okay. And would I get the results of that then, or would I come back for a second visit?
You would come back for a second visit. They're
okay.
sent out
so
in order to be read.
You take the pictures and then they're interpreted.
Correct.
And another thing I remember about this test is, compared to my mammogram, which cost me $800 this year out of pocket.
Wow.
Your thermography is about?
$225.
Very good. So very cost effective to get you a much earlier result.
Absolutely.
And Catherine, you've actually had this done. What was your experience?
It was pretty amazing. Yes, the room is cool, but Rana is so warm and friendly that it just was a really great experience. And getting the results back, she explained to me exactly what was going on and what my risk level was and what I needed to do to make sure that I could decrease my risk. And I came away from that conversation knowing that if I don't do something right now, then in about 10 years, I would actually be dealing with the disease. And so I just came away knowing that this gave me a great comfort to know that I could actually have
to know where
control.
You were, yeah, and you could do
I can
something.
Control the disease. I didn't have to sit and wait.
Yeah, and compared to your mammogram experience?
Well, I have to admit, I haven't had one.
Okay, well, that's interesting to know. I think it's viewed in conjunction. So really, if something were found, would you refer the patient for a mammogram?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Basically, our view and the FDA's view is that you need to use thermography in conjunction with other imaging devices. Mm-hmm. They do totally different things. Mm-hmm. One is not either or. Right. But if you do the research, again, on how many women do not do their mammogram for all of the reasons of what you mentioned previously,
yes. Uh-huh.
It hurts, they're afraid of the radiation, they're mm-hmm. afraid of looking, they're afraid of what they might find, whatever it might be. In many cases, this is a nice gradient for them to take a look, and it's graded. The thermography is graded on a scale of 1 to 5. The higher the number, the greater the risk. And obviously, to us, we want people engaged in their breast health. We don't want people having to go through the process of anybody having to deal with breast cancer. So if we can catch something early and we see a negative sign or a risk factor that's not, you know, something you'd want to see, we refer them immediately to get that mammography,
right.
to get that ultrasound, because they have to see what is actually happening. Used in conjunction with mammography and with ultrasound, you have a 97% chance with thermography of actually seeing what's fully there. There are false positives and false negatives, but when you use those three together, it's a very high percentage that you will find what's going on, and you can catch it a lot sooner than if you just left it alone and, you know, saw something down the road that was a lump that now you have to proceed with the biopsy and head down that street.
Right. And just to end, I know we're radio and not visual, but I joked with Rana. She had shown me a little visual of what you can actually see is like, I don't know, the tip of a pen, a very small, small, small area that's problematic through thermography, but a much larger size of a quarter area with mammography. So the point at which you can pinpoint where the problem starts, you're able to see much more clearly at the beginning.
Yes, we're able to see those functional changes when it's about 2 millimeters in diameter.
Very good. Thank you. Well, ladies, it's hard to believe we're out of time. I wish we had more time. I want to thank each of you for coming on. And it was a great, all of you, check out breast thermography. Come and visit Rana. How they reach you at your practice, Dr. Billy, at your website?
Our website is alternativehealthatlanta.com. You can reach us there. And our phone number is 770-937-9200. Give you any information, answer any questions. Ron is available if you have questions about breast health, and I can speak to you about any other health issues you might have.
And they're all as lovely as they sound. Please go visit them, Alternative Health Atlanta. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.